All right, everyone, welcome to another episode of O365A. In this episode, we're going to be talking notes from the field. So it's been a year since we've done our last episode, and this past year has obviously been challenging for everyone with regards to work and the world. And so we want to discuss some of the things that, you know, we've been working on over the past year and some of the challenges and things that we've done to sort of overcome those challenges that we've been working on. So I think, Dino, maybe you can lead us off sort of what things have been like for you for the past year work-wise.
Yeah, thanks. I mean, it feels like just yesterday we recorded that episode, and I don't know, I haven't left this chair, but whether that's good or bad, I'm not sure. But I mean, I think, you know, a year ago, it was like firefighting a lot of Skype for Business load issues for a lot of my customers. A lot of challenges running meetings. All of a sudden, everybody's working from home. So Skype server just is, you know, taking on loads of users that it wasn't used to handling before, and organizations just hadn't seen that. So it's gone from that to more movement and uptick of orgs looking at Teams. So I've certainly been spending a lot of time helping organizations plan their upgrade to Microsoft Teams. And I guess with that, like the whole governance discussion has been prevalent one for sure. So a lot of orgs really want to get under the covers and understand how they can control access to things. And I guess that leads me to what I just wanted to bring a discussion, and that's on Teams templates. And we talked about this in the past, but, you know, templates can be are an interesting thing, and in that, you know, the notion is users can create Teams based on pre-existing canned templates that Microsoft has built out, like whether you're in healthcare or government or in an educational setting. So on the surface are a, you know, a great idea, but I've come across a lot of shortcomings in them, and obviously those templates work well if you're in a an environment that lets anybody create Teams. They have access to the templates so they can create groups. Where that starts to break down is when the group creation is sort of locked down. So it's got to go through a help desk anyway. So the templates, really the value becomes diminished in that regard because only administrators can use them. So I had a recent interesting scenario with a customer that wanted to use the group lockdown creation where you have creators, and they had a number of users, about 100 users that they wanted to have create Teams, and we looked at using templates, but there's some limitations in the templates in terms of team settings that aren't copy over. So I just wanted to caution viewers, if they were looking at templates and you wanted to, you know, look at great for, you know, setting up all your channels and the apps and everything you want, but if you wanted to lock down certain channel restrictions, like I don't want users to be able to, the members to be able to create channels in my team, those settings don't get preserved in a template today. So you have to look at using a reference team, for example, to achieve that. So instruct your users to build a team off another team. So little challenge there, but you know, so that, yeah, that was all I wanted to bring up for me in terms of today. So I think I'm, how about Michael and Hab, like, you worked on a project recently together. Maybe you want to take us through that and some of the challenges you encountered.
Yeah. So yeah, maybe talking about the last year. I mean, I can't believe it's been a year. And like Dino said, I feel like I haven't moved from this like 4x4 foot area in a year. But yeah, so early on, it was a lot of Teams enablement. So license conversations, governance, online meetings, people abandoning Skype server and just going, you know, using Teams and maybe dealing with the Teams modes and, you know, then kind of going into, you know, dealing with onboarding to tenants. So Exchange, hybrid, Exchange, migrations, Skype hybrid and stuff like that, moving off of Skype. But what I'm kind of seeing now is just, it seems like everyone is just enabling telephony in Teams. So they've come to that point or that realization that these handsets that are in their office that are collecting dust and maybe doing single number reach or call forwarding to cell phones is not a very efficient cost of the support maintenance and the renewals of that infrastructure. So I, done a lot of projects where it's like, hey, we have a renewal for, you know, call manager from Cisco or whatever. We want to get as many endpoints off of that before the renewal. So there's been a big push on that. And I think this whole work from home has also unlocked a lot of roadblocks, you know, dealing with analog devices, you know, no one's touching handsets, lobby phones, some of the paging systems, all that stuff is kind of abandoned. So you don't have to, you know, find a replacement or a handset for handset swap. You're able to really just get the dial pad in Teams, unlock that business phone number as Teams is a soft client, and go back to your kind of your operations. So it's been an interesting shift, and it seems like the organizations that are onboarding on phone system and Teams is just getting larger and larger and quicker and quicker. Also, I'm seeing kind of a parallel, as I say, handsets with collecting dust in the office. In parallel, it seems like all the IT teams are doing all their room refreshes. So, hey, now we're fully into Teams. We have these rooms that are not fully booked, you know, every minute of the day. Let's start to do some renovations and start to, you know, maybe change the size of a boardroom to two smaller rooms or whatever the scenarios are, and put new technology in there, like a Teams room. So I'm getting pulled into a lot of enterprise deployments of Microsoft Teams rooms, dealing with authentication with, you know, single sign-on, ADFS, and network, and all the security stuff. So I've seen that kind of shift of hardware for rooms, but remote for telephony. So pass it off to Hab. Maybe you could talk about his last year, and then we'll talk about our project that we worked on together.
Yeah, I mean, last year has been pretty crazy, just like you guys. Spent the, I guess, the better part of, you know, early last year, after COVID hit, doing migrations to Teams. So there was a lot of on-prem, you know, Skype for Business or Link 2013 deployments that just wanted to get to Teams. With that, you know, some of them had telephony, some of them didn't, but they just wanted to get to Teams because they felt that that was the right approach and the right way to go for their end users. And then, you know, there was that part, and then there was other portions, other clients that I had where we were onboarding just M365 in general, and we were lighting everybody up for Teams, and we were just doing like mini kind of governance just to, you know, put some type of guardrails on in the tenant. And then now basically sort of what I'm finding now is we're, as Dino mentioned, we're doing a lot more in-depth type of guardrail and security and stuff like that to apply, you know, more security and more, I wouldn't say more restrictions, but just ensuring that the tenant is more secure. You know, users are more secure as well, right? So that's sort of the thing that I'm sort of living in now. I'm in the compliance area, right? So I'm reading a lot of compliance documentation and understanding how that all works and doing some things in there. But yeah, Michael and I finally got to partner up on one project that we worked on together for an enterprise customer. And so they wanted to light up Microsoft Teams calling plans, and it was roughly around 5,000 users. And so it was pretty challenging in itself, you know, not just for being at 5,000 users, but I mean, there was, you know, language requirements, the requirements of having 50 different locations and trying to get phone numbers and stuff like that. So, you know, Michael did a lot of the heavy lifting on the PowerShell side of things, so I'll let him talk about that side. But yeah,
I mean, I've learned at scale, direct routing is much easier than calling plans. It's kind of funny, but the PowerShell commandlets that you use to manage calling plans are kind of designed for smaller organizations. So they have a lot of like result size or the default a number of returned results that you have to override to really deal with it at scale. And also there's a lot more moving parts, right? So with calling plans, you need to have, you know, your emergency locations, then you need to tie a number to a user to a location, right? And whereas direct routing, you're like, hey, it doesn't matter if that number is in the tenant or not, you can just put anything on a user. So it was interesting, you know, dealing with that. Also, the other interesting thing was we were getting all net new numbers from Microsoft. So we weren't dealing with porting where we have our inventory that's known and we're just bringing it over and it's just timing that. We were actually going around and, you know, trying to get as much number, as many numbers in each of these different geos that were required. So we may come into limits where, you know, availability, and then we'd have to come up with monitoring systems to watch the inventory be replaced or replenished so we could steal it all again. So it was an interesting kind of whack-a-mole type of scenario where we end up getting, you know, almost, you know, 5,000 some numbers kind of sitting in inventory unassigned to then just do this back mass enablement, right? Because we needed all these numbers before we started enabling any users, because we had to confirm when we would be done, right? So if we were going to tell the organization that, hey, 5,000 users are going to be enabled by, you know, next week, well, we can't go in and say, oh, yeah, but except for these 500 users in this city and then 300 in these. So we had to have all the inventory available prior.
Yeah, it was definitely challenging in that sense. And I still say it now, you know, we live in the spreadsheet. I mean, that's where everything is. Like, I would say 90+% of it was, you know, ensuring that the data was all clean and ready and prepared and stuff like that. And, you know, recommendation is just to keep your scripts and stuff like that simple when you're doing these type of deployments. But I'll pass it over to Kurt. So Kurt, what's your year been like, you know, in the dev world?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting hearing everyone's experiences the last year working for a third-party management software vendor on the R&D side. I've seen the side effect of everything you guys are talking about in terms of COVID really ushered in this accelerated move to Microsoft 365 and Teams. And, you know, we've seen it on a couple of different fronts. Talk about compliance and governance and security, especially now that we're in, what, wave three of COVID, and there's been, you know, millions of seats of Teams deployed. Enterprises are more focused now on governance, and specifically when you look at the life cycle of a typical project in Teams, a team is created, there's the active use phase, and then there's the sunsetting phase. So having good guardrails and controls around all three of those stages are really important, and they're actually top of mind for enterprises now. So, you know, we've been in a lot of customer conversations in terms of how to help them do that responsibly, but still allow end users to get the best of Teams. So that's been something that's been on the forefront for a while, and we've dived into, and it's certainly been what I've been working on considerably for the last 3-4 months. And then the other one, just talk about, you know, Teams adoption and accelerating it. It's been a lot of migration, both Teams tenant to tenant, so merger and acquisition activity, and just even companies coming from different platforms like Slack to Teams. And you know, specifically on the Slack front, it's interesting because Slack had a lot of shadow IT adoption out in the industry, and Microsoft 365 has matured enough and enough companies have bought into the Microsoft Teams story that it just makes sense from a Teams perspective to leverage that. From a cost perspective, it's typically rolled into the license. From a security and compliance, you get the benefit of all the Microsoft 365 ecosystem. You're not, you know, dependent on a third-party cloud service to host all that valuable organization data. So we've been in you know, a lot of conversations, interesting ones with customers with large Slack deployments. How do you get to Microsoft Teams? And, you know, some of the interesting things, there's been a lot of business processes built into Slack that are difficult or challenging to migrate. So there's that, and just, you know, a lot of different mappings of how Slack is used to Teams. So that's definitely been an interesting conversation, and, you know, trying to figure out how to help customers there. So that's been a big theme for the last 6 months. And then, of course, as we've all been involved in, is there's been a lot of virtual conferences, right? So we had Ignite times 2 and many user group and community events. So, you know, just looking, we were talking before we started this episode of what's coming up for the rest of this year. And so we have Teams Nation. That's coming up May 26th.
And May 12th.
May 12th. Oh, is it May 12th?
Yeah.
All right. And then Commsverse, which was really initially scheduled for June 29th. I think Habits was it's pushed till September now, right?
Yeah, I don't know the actual day, but yeah, it was moved to September.
Yeah. So we have those coming up, and of course, we're going to do a session for Teams Nation on deploying phone system at scale. So that should be fun. Michael can give us all those great PowerShell tips.
Don't forget Excel tips.
Yeah. Excel 201 session. Yeah.
But anything else come to mind in terms of community events coming up for the rest of this year for you guys?
Well, I mean, we're also speaking next week at the Minnesota user group, Minnesota Admin Day user group. So that'll be a good session there as well. So we're going to be talking to the local folks there. We did one last year as well. We also spoke at Teams Nation as well. So, yeah, I mean, I think there's still probably another Ignite coming up, and there's Inspire, and then there's the, I think there's also an adoption one as well, or was that? I'm not sure if it was adoption or something else. But yeah, there's definitely a lot of virtual conferences. I think there's SharePoint Fest. I mean, there's so many of them that are out there, right? So I mean,
and of course, let's not forget the biggest one, the Quest Technical Experts Conference in September.
Yes. Yeah. Shameless
plug. Got it down. I can't miss that.
But yeah, I mean, definitely a lot of conferences coming up, and you know, it's been a challenging year, I think, for all of us, both personally and professionally, you know, along with everybody else around the world. And I know we say it a little bit offline, you know, I can't wait to hang out with you guys again. It's definitely been a long time. I think it's been since 2019 since we've all seen each other, so hopefully we'll be able to hang out together along with, you know, some of the viewers and all the other community members, you know, that we know as well. So, anyways, that being said, thanks everybody for listening in, and hopefully we'll catch you on our next episode.
Thanks.
Yep.